Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm a senior writer with HowStuffWorks.com. I like to talk about things that go buzz in the night, you know, like robots and stuff. And today, I thought we'd explore the world of Alienware. This is a company that's been making specialized gaming rig computers since the mid-1990s. And I thought it might be cool to see where it got its start and where is it going. Now, a little bit later in this episode, I'll be talking with Frank Azor, general manager of Alienware, one of the co-founders, one of the early employees of the company. And he's going to give us some background on that company, a little bit more about the philosophy and the design decisions and just kind of what makes the company tick. But let's set the stage a little bit so that we understand why Alienware even has a space in the PC world. Well, games have been part of computer history for a really long time, which really shouldn't come as much of a surprise. Gaming has always been a big part of the human experience. We hone skills through games. We bond socially with others. We explore ideas. We test philosophies. Or sometimes we just want to beat up on some sort of, I don't know, Martian robo overlord or something. Now, back in 1958, before personal computers were even a thing, there was a physicist named William Higginbotham who used an analog computer and an oscilloscope to create a game similar to what would later become Pong. And a few years later, in 62, Stephen Russell at MIT created Space War, which was a predecessor to the arcade machines that would follow more than a decade later. These games were built on specialized hardware. We're talking like mainframe computers. We have to go 10 years into the future to look about the first PC games, because personal computers weren't really a thing till the mid to late 70s. For example, in 1976, Will Crowther, who actually was one of the people who worked on the ARPANET, that was a predecessor to the internet. It was a network that ended up pioneering the technologies that would power the internet. Well, he wasn't just busy helping make computers talk to each other. He was also developing a text-based game in Fortran called Colossal Cave Adventure for the PDP-10 mainframe, which is not exactly a PC, I grant you, but other programmers began to work on the project in order to port it over to different computer systems, including personal computer systems. And these text-based games were kind of like a role-playing game. It would spell out what is going on in any given room. You would get a paragraph of text, and it would describe your surroundings and things that are in the area. And you would have to type in whatever it was you wanted to do. So, for example, you might say there's the description says, you are in a room, there is an old chair in the corner, and a door leads out to the north. And you might say, sit in chair. And if the programmers had thought about that, then you would get a response. Perhaps it would be something such as, you sit in the chair, that's a load off, or the chair collapses under your weight, you're now sitting on a pile of lumber, or whatever the result may be. And you would just go turn through turn. Not exactly the cutting edge in technology by today's standards, but it was an early attempt at creating games for computers. And there were a lot of these text-based games in the day. I remember things like the Zork series or Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and of course, The Leather Goddesses of Phobos. And yes, that's a real game. You can look it up. Before long, a host of programmers began to build graphics-based games. They began to create things that weren't just text-related. You could control little characters or perhaps control a vehicle of some sort. It was all very primitive at the time. The graphics were very basic, and so were the sounds. Display resolution and processor power and sound ability were placing really hefty limitations on what a game developer could do. Not that it stopped people from pushing the envelope. There have always been game developers who have been creating games that push hardware to its limits. And so it was even in the early days, but those limits were much lower back then. And then Moore's Law just kept on plugging away. You know, that observation that, generally speaking, today we interpret it as computers get about twice as powerful every 24 months as they were before. So in 2 years, the computers that you buy are twice as powerful as the ones from 2 years previous. And 2 years in the future, they'll be twice as powerful as the ones that are here today. Well, that was still going along, and so you were getting increasing amounts of processing power, but if you start off small, then doubling doesn't mean you get a huge amount, right? Not at the beginning. It over time, yes. But let's say that, you know, you can lift 20 pounds, and then you train and train and train and train, and now you can lift twice that. You can lift 40 pounds. Well, 40 pounds in the grand scheme of things still isn't that much, but then you train and train, and then it's 80 pounds, and then 160, and then pretty soon you're talking about really, really big numbers. Well, in those early days of personal computers, we weren't talking big numbers. So while developers were creating games that could push hardware to its limits, it was still pretty modest. Then something big happened, and it happened in the mid-1990s. And that big something was 3D graphics. Now, that was not 3D in the you need special glasses in order to play this game sense, but rather that the rendered objects on screen appeared to have three dimensions to them. They appeared to have depth. And that was a lot different from what had been there. It used to be that games all looked like just two-dimensional characters. There was no third dimension to them. Games like Doom and Quake started to sport these three-dimensional graphics, and you needed hardware to support that capability. In the early days, it was the CPU's job to do all of that 3D rendering. Now, obviously, the CPU has to do a lot. So pushing 3D rendering onto the CPU as well made it work even harder. So a few companies began to explore options with expansion cards that would take on some of the work that the CPU would have to do. Video cards had been around since the 1980s, but none of them were really true 3D graphics cards. Those would come in the mid-90s, and one of the earliest of those was the Verge PCI expansion card from S3. Verge, spelled V-I-R-G-E, stood for Virtual Reality Graphics Engine. So they had pretty high aspirations back in those mid-90s. We're talking like 1995 right here. So this would be during the first attempt to bring virtual reality out into the public consciousness. This was the one that ultimately crashed in on itself, and ultimately it set virtual reality back by about a decade, because people were so disenchanted by it that no one was really willing to pour any money into it for quite some time. Well, the first card, this Verge PCI expansion card, had 4 whole megabytes of memory and a clock speed of 66 megahertz. Now, at the time, that was impressive, but by today's standards, it wouldn't even measure up to a bargain bin graphics card. What it did do, however, was create a new era, the era of the hardcore gamer, because now you could actually get a supplemental card on your computer that would allow you to play these advanced games, and there had never been anything like that, really, before. And tons of other graphics cards followed, both from S3, that was the company that made the Verge PCI card, and lots of other manufacturers as well. So there were some pretty big names that got serious traction in those days. You had ATI, that was way before the Radeon days, and they introduced the Rage 3D card. I remember when that came out. 3DFX launched the Voodoo 1, which was incredibly influential. I'll have to do a full episode about 3DFX sometime in the future. That whole story is a little weird. The Voodoo 1 also did something the other early 3D cards did not do. It focused solely on rendering 3D graphics. Other early cards would fuse 3D graphics rendering with 2D graphics rendering, so you'd have both of them handled by the same graphics card. But with the Voodoo 1, you actually had to have a second graphics card just to handle the 2D graphics. It would work alongside the Voodoo 1 in order for you to get the full functionality. And it doesn't stop with the Voodoo 1 either. NVIDIA got into the game, literally in this case, with the launch of the NV3 in 1997. Later still, in 1998, a Canadian company called Matrox decided to wade into the fray, and they had their own 3D acceleration cards. And Intel tried to compete in this new space with the i740 graphics cards, though the product failed to get much traction in the marketplace, and it didn't get very many positive reviews either. For the most part, the graphics card market was dominated by ATI, NVIDIA, 3DFX, and S3 in those early years. So this creates some level of confusion for people who want to pursue PC gaming. Let's take myself as an example. I was playing PC games back then. I wasn't a console gamer at this time in the mid to late 90s. I was a PC gamer. But my PC was just a basic PC. I didn't have like a dedicated graphics card. And once these games started to get this advanced, and there was really more or less a requirement for you to get a 3D graphics card, it was hard for me to figure out what I should do next. There were so many different cards on the market, and they all had different abilities, and I wasn't really sure what any of them were. And they also, many of them had proprietary approaches, which meant that you could buy a game that requires a 3D graphics accelerator card, and you have one of those cards in your computer, but you have one from a different manufacturer, and because it's not compatible, you can't play the game. Even though from a raw power standpoint, you'd be fine. Your card is completely capable of churning out the output that you would need, but because of that proprietary approach and the incompatibility issue, the game still won't run on your machine. This was really frustrating. Before that, before the graphics cards and sound cards really became a big deal, you just had to really worry about the motherboard and the CPU plus any expansion cards you might want in order to hook up gear to your computer. But now you suddenly had to take those 3D graphics cards into account. This was a non-trivial task. You had all these competing products on the market, and you didn't necessarily know which firmware, which proprietary approach, rather, would be the best one. You might go out and buy a card that today had support for most of the games that were on the market. And then a year from then, it might turn out that all the games that are coming out don't support that format anymore. They go to one of the competitors. So it's a very confusing and frustrating time. It meant that game developers also were going through this. They had to decide, which graphics cards were they going to support with their games? Because every time you add on another graphics card to support, you add on time that it takes and money and other resources that it takes to develop the game so that it will run on that platform. So from a game developer standpoint, having lots of different incompatible formats out there is frustrating because you have to make those decisions. If you try to support everything, it's going to take you longer to get your game out, which means it's going to be more expensive to you. It means you're going to have to sell more copies of it in order to get a return on your investment. And if you choose to not support everyone, then you have to figure out which card makes the most sense to support, which one is going to get you the most potential sales. It was not a great time to have to make these decisions. It was really kind of difficult. So it was a total bummer if you were a gamer and you felt like you had made bad decisions, or just that you had made a decision that turned out later on to become bad. Like at the time it wasn't bad, but later down the road it did. Building a PC got more complicated and the games kept coming out. And so that opened up an opportunity for a company to come along and serve that market. So instead of building identical beige boxes with like standard specs to them, this company would design gaming rigs with gamers in mind. So the company would offer up various options for gamers to choose from. So it wasn't even just like, here are three different computer models. There were a lot of options for gamers to choose which components they wanted included, and that would obviously affect everything from the performance of the PC to its ultimate price. Now, all of the actual work in building the rig would be done by the company. The gamer wouldn't have to do it, so that takes that responsibility off the gamer's shoulders. That company was Alienware. But here's a little bit of trivia. It wasn't originally called Alienware. In fact, it wasn't originally meant to be a PC gaming rig company. The original name of the company back in 1996 was Sykai, and it was based in Miami, Florida. Still is, in fact, to this day. Alienware is still in Miami. The founder was Nelson Gonzalez, and he started the company with a $10,000 personal credit loan. He didn't set out to make gaming rigs right away either. He was just going to build personal computers. But then he noticed that many of the people he knew, like his friends and family, were coming to him for advice on how to make a personal computer run certain games that either were underperforming on their current machine or not even working at all. And Gonzalez understood the complexities of the PC space at the time and helped get those computers in shape. You know, his friends and family, he helped them out, and he made sure that they could run the latest games, and they didn't have these compatibility issues. So he then developed a business plan, and that business plan was direct selling to customers. It was a very transparent sort of approach where customers could come straight through to purchase these PCs, which increasingly became gaming rigs. He was still making regular PC computers at the time, but he was finding more and more of his time dedicated to building out these gaming rigs for gamers. In 1997, he convinced his friend Alex Aguila to join him at his company, and by the end of 97, the two decided it was time to pivot the business and focus solely on building PC gaming rigs. They said farewell to the standard PC business and went all in on gaming. Now, as I said at the top of the show, I had the opportunity to talk to the general manager of Alienware, Frank Azor, and we had a nice conversation. So we'll listen in on that interview right after we take this break to thank our sponsor. Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's C-O-N-C-U-R.com. Working remotely? Where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
First of all, thank you so much for joining me today. I very much appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jonathan. Appreciate it.
And I would like to start at the beginning. I find that's always a good place. And talk about the earliest days. We're talking about Alienware, a brand that has really established itself as the forefront for, especially for like high-performing gaming rigs. But how did it all get started?
Well, it starts with an idea, pretty simply. We were very passionate gamers at the time, and mostly playing on PC, some on console. And a lot of really great games were coming out on the PC. Around that time, we were working with Doom, Doom 2, Quake, and these games were really pushing the performance boundaries of what PCs were able to do then. And it was also really hard to get to work correctly on PCs back then. We had a 16-bit DOS operating system, 32-bit Windows operating system. Graphics cards were just starting to emerge on the market for consumers, and there was 2D cards and 3D cards. So it was really hard to get these games to work correctly. So our CEO had started a PC company and was just trying to build like regular PCs at the time. And a lot of friends kept coming to him and saying, hey, I want to play these games and I want to play them with you guys. Can you help me tweak my machine to do it or build me one to do it? And he would help them out. And little by little, it just started forming into a business. And he reached out to one of his friends, Alex, and Alex joined him. And then they reached out to another friend. That friend introduced me to them. And Alienware was born.
So this is a great point that you make, this idea of how in those early days when PC games were really starting to enter in a new level of sophistication. I mean, PC gaming obviously had been an element since the birth of the personal computer, but around the mid-90s is when we really started to see it blossom and push the boundaries of what computers were capable of doing. It really was a complicated system to try and keep up with the demands of the latest games. You had all these different cards, some of which might not be compatible with certain motherboards, which to the uninitiated, to people who don't build computers, that creates a real barrier, right? It creates that level of intimidation of getting into PC gaming, something that still really exists today. There may be people out there who do not realize that not all processors are compatible with all motherboards, and you may have issues with certain graphics cards. And so to create a business around solving those issues so that the consumer doesn't have to think about it obviously has a great deal of appeal. What sort of What are some of the things that gamers need to think about when they are talking about gaming rigs? You know, we're talking about, you know, graphics processing. What are the sort of metrics you guys look at when you're building out your machines?
Yeah, PC gaming was absolutely very complicated initially. Fortunately, it's gotten a lot simpler over time. On the software side, we've had solutions like Steam and Origin's solution. EA uses Origin for their games. And what they've done with these digital distribution solutions is that they've made them a lot easier for us to maintain our games, to download our games, to patch them up, to deal with DRM and CD keys. In the old days, you used to have discs, multiple discs to install a game. You used to have to keep your CD key somewhere around, or your game key somewhere around, and if you lost it, you were kind of SOL. Mm-hmm. And not only was it difficult to do that, but then there was always patches that you had to go out to these obscure websites to try and download. And sometimes there were viruses built into those patches because there were, malicious code that other people would bundle into the executables. And it was always hard to maintain and keep up with all the patches that are out there. It was just very difficult. So we got really, really lucky with these, innovations that companies like Steam and the others built, to help simplify this whole experience. And then on the hardware side, companies like Alienware, we've been in providing turnkey gaming systems for folks so that they don't have to worry about the PC itself, the technology that goes into it, maintaining the technology, servicing it if and when it fails. When someone comes to Alienware, they're coming to us because they want to focus on playing the games. They don't want to have to worry about the tech and the potential headaches that come associated with it. And that's really been what we've built our business on, is telling folks, look, if you have the time, the knowledge, and the expertise to build your own system, by all means, you're always going to build something better than what anybody else can build it for you. But when your time becomes a little bit more limited and your patience may be a little bit more limited, and you want to just focus on your game and not have to worry about the hardware that enables you to enjoy that experience, that's what it was for. So what we've done over the years is we've done a lot of work to try and simplify making those decisions. If you look at how we sell our systems today and how we offer them to customers, a bunch of different kind of preset configurations for them to kind of see, okay, well, this is like a mid-range system. This is a really high-end system. We give them the right communication that they need to know about what their system capabilities are going to be. We tell them that this is going to be a 1080p gaming system, or if this is a 4K capable rig. And then, of course, if they want to customize it, we offer them the options to be able to do it. But the whole thing that what we've tried to do is we've tried to simplify the gaming experience for folks, to make it less intimidating and to help grow, quite frankly, which we've been very successful in doing. PC gaming's going to, or gaming in general, I should say, not just PC, but gaming's going to grow to be a $30 billion business this year, which is pretty amazing, something that exceeded our wildest expectations.
And the approach of Alienware, again, not to harp on it too much, but this idea of creating the solutions for the gamer, for people who haven't built a machine, that's a non-trivial issue. I mean, I know gamers who consider themselves console gamers largely because they find the idea of trying to build a gaming rig to be intimidating. They are worried that if they build one, that the specs will become obsolete so quickly that it will not have justified the amount of time they put into it. They've heard horror stories about people building rigs, and then you get to that magic moment where you flip the power switch and nothing happens, and you aren't really sure what it was that went wrong, and then you have to work it all out. So something like this, where you have the gaming rigs built, and you can even customize it in the ordering process, makes life a lot easier to get into that PC gaming world where, you know, you can finally find out if all those PC gamers who have been boasting for years that the gameplay and graphics are far superior to any console, you can finally find out for yourself. And for anyone who has not gone through, even just as a this is my dream rig experience, I do recommend actually building out a gaming rig using the Alienware approach, because I've done that on multiple occasions, and it's always my, all right, if I sell a book, this is the rig I'm buying. Like this, that next book deal, that next, whatever that big bonus is, this is the rig, because it is, you could build a real beast with those tools. So Tell me a little bit more about what's the story behind the name Alienware. Did that come from anything in particular, or was it just something like a cool idea, or was there inspiration drawn from elsewhere? Because I could tell you what Wikipedia says.
Yeah, be careful with what Wikipedia says. Because you'd be amazed at how many founders of Alienware there are out there that we've never heard of on Wikipedia popping up left and right. But yeah, it's a really interesting story. You know, back in the late 90s, The X-Files was a really popular show at the time. And Nelson, our CEO, and then the original founder to the company who came up with the concept of Alienware and really the concept of selling PC gaming systems, he's a very creative individual. He actually created pretty much all of the art that Alienware ever put out, all of our graphics and art and industrial design with the help of Astro Studios in the for the majority of Alienware's early years. And, you know, he was thinking to himself, once he had the idea for building this gaming company, he was thinking to himself, well, we're going to kind of be building the best computers in the world. We're going to be using some of the latest and greatest hardware to run the latest and greatest software that's out there, games in particular. These games are the ones that are like pushing the limits as to what's possible in computing at the time, and still are in a lot of ways. So he was thinking about what he's going to call this company, and he was kind of putting together hardware and software and thinking, well, we're going to be, you know, kind of state-of-the-art, advanced technologies. And he just figured, you know, aliens, we tend to think, have superior technology to what we have here. So they kind of put it all together, hardware, software, aliens, and that's really where the name emerged from.
And the aesthetic really developed pretty early on, too. I mean, obviously, the very first Alienware rigs that came out, some of them included early desktops included colors that you just didn't see out there, things that really set them apart. But shortly after that, you got away from the standard sort of box tower design of desktops, and you started getting into some really interesting curved lines and vents, the machines that looked like they went fast even while they were sitting still. I mean, I think that the Predator desktop is still one of those that I look at, and I just love that design. Was that something that came from the same group?
Yeah, it's an interesting history. You know, when you're a really small company, and we were a small company, and we grew organically, we never took investment in the early days. We really grew everything based on the sales that were coming in and just reinvesting little by little into the company. So we knew that we had a vision for the kind of products that we wanted to develop. And little by little, we started realizing that vision. We wanted to bring the type of design that Apple at the time and still even today had brought to consumer electronics. We wanted to bring that to PCs, in particular PC games or PC gaming systems. Back then, you may recall, pretty much every computer was like a beige, boring box. Mm-hmm. And the only company that was actually doing any hint of industrial design was IBM, because they had black that they were using. And that was about as far as it had gone. And Apple had come out with the iMacs and these really cool designs and colors, and they were adding life into these devices. And Nelson's like, look, we eventually want to go and build our own product from the ground up. But we can't afford to do it yet. I mean, to build something like that, it's millions of dollars. And we just couldn't afford it. We were such a small company. So we said to ourselves, what's the most we could do within what we could afford at that time? And that's where we went out. We started looking for some really cool cases that existed on the market out there, out in Taiwan and in China. And then we started working on painting them, so that we can give customers the ability to, you know, personalize their experience with a really, really cool paint job and color motif and everything that would just stand out in a crowd of beige computers and boring old designs. And that's really what started it. We experimented with that. We thought that would succeed. It took off massively. And thanks to that, we were able to go off and create the Predator project. And that project, the Predator chassis, that case, has defined the look of Alienware computers ever since that we came out with it. Our notebooks had a very similar design when we came out with our first gaming notebook and the industry's first gaming notebook. And then even then, if you look at our products today, you'll see that there's several characteristics about them that are much more evolved and more current and futuristic as compared to what we built with the Predator. back then, and in the notebook we called it Skullcap. But they still pay homage to that original industrial design and that that legacy of identity that we established with that Predator chassis back then. I mean, nowadays, to bring a product to market, for example, like one of our desktops, like the Area 51 desktop, we spent over $10 million in research and development bringing that product to market. And every single element of that design is completely custom. If you look at it, that's a really cool triangular design that, that we offer today. We just updated it to a AMD Threadripper 16-core processor. It's like the fastest desktop ever built before. And every element of it, you know, down to the fans that we're using, the liquid cooling system, the paint that we're using, the material composition, the architecture of the chassis and the construction of it, the shape of it's unique. It's never been done before. So, you know, we're pushing the limit even more and more and more and innovating more than we've ever done. And thankful, it's all thanks to our customers for, you know, believing in us, trusting us, and investing in us that we've been able to continue to push these limits.
And with that particular design, that triangular one, I got a chance to see that at E3, and it is an amazing piece of technology. It's very clever. I like the design where it allows for more efficient cooling of the various elements. Obviously, now that we're in a time where overclocking is becoming more and more of a standard approach from a lot of power gamers out there, you've got multiple high-powered graphics processing units in there. You've got to have a good heat management system, or else, I mean, we all know heat and electronics are not best buddies. Things break down quickly if they get too hot. So seeing that design and seeing that approach, I thought was very interesting, very clever. And for those out there who aren't familiar with the process for building out these sort of things, you're talking about early designs going into prototype models, going into production models, going into manufacturing models. And this is a very long process for any piece of any kind of product that comes out on mass production. So it's one of those processes that I think behind the scenes that a lot of people just don't think about when they see something brand new on the shelf. They don't realize the number of hours that go into any given product for that to be out there. So I appreciate you kind of enlightening us on that. And I also want to point out that early reviews of Alienware really gave it a big boost as well. In fact, there was a magazine article that ended up getting a really great push for Alienware when the reviewer said that if there were any way he could hold on to the Alienware desktop he was given to review and not return it, he would very much appreciate that. So I think that's probably the best review any computer manufacturer can hope for, when the person giving the review admits outright that they just want to hold on to that machine.
Yeah, that was a defining moment in our history, for a couple of reasons. One, because getting a great review is always awesome, and we're very sensitive to what the press and especially our customers say about us and our products. And pretty much any comment, any question, any complaint about anything that reaches us at Alienware headquarters goes answered, because if we mess up, we want our customers to acknowledge. We want to acknowledge to our customers that we did so. We want to learn from it, and we want to improve. And if we didn't necessarily mess up, we want to defend ourselves and explain why. But listening to customers' feedback, listening to what the experts in the industry, like press and journalists, have to say about our products, and acting upon that has been a key contributor not only to our initial success, but also to all of our success up to now. It's because of our ability to listen and be so sensitive to that information, because we've never forgotten where we came from. We really came from, of course, that idea, that original idea that Nelson had, but we also came from that review, which told us what we did well and what we needed to improve on, but it also gave us confidence that we were really onto something. See, at that time, what we were doing had never been done before. Nobody was building computers optimized to play games. There was no market data as to how big this market is. There was nobody to follow and draft from. We modeled ourselves after Apple from an industrial design and identity perspective and iconic nature, And then we modeled ourselves after Dell from a go-to-market business model type of perspective. We knew we wanted to offer customization and personalization, and we wanted to focus on being a primarily direct type of business. But we, you know, we could model ourselves in the business that way and the way in which we wanted to approach our products, but had no idea like what these gaming computers were and if people wanted to buy them and if people saw value in them and if they cared about them. And those initial reviews gave us that confidence and, of course, gave us the awareness and the exposure to the market so that people knew what we were doing. And that phone started ringing off the hook. And that confidence was critical, really. I don't know that if we wouldn't have gotten that confidence at that time that we'd have Alienware here today, because we would have maybe thought we had a dud on our hands. If that reviewer would have said, this is really cool, but it's $5,000. I don't know why anybody in their right mind would buy this thing. It's not worth it. And we would have been like, maybe we shouldn't have done this. I mean, I don't know for sure. That wasn't necessarily a do or die moment. But it was certainly a moment where I remember having the confidence to say, yeah, we're onto something here. Let's keep moving forward with this thing.
Right. And then in 1998, you had PC World name the original Area 51 desktop one of its best PCs of all time. They listed 25 different machines, and Area 51 was one of the ones listed. So clearly things were on the right track. You already mentioned the fact that the company was the first to offer a laptop specifically for gaming. There were other firsts that came out too. You had the first liquid-cooled desktop in 2004 with the ALX. So there's been a lot of innovation on going on with the Alienware. The brand has been associated with that, both in the components that you include inside your rigs, but also obviously that aesthetic, that thing that really sets the Alienware apart from just a first glance, whether it's the triangular shape of the new Area 51 machine or it's, you know, custom lights and cool vents and really nice paint jobs. What do you see as the future for Alienware? We've got a lot of stuff that's battling it out to try and really emerge as a new era in gaming, whether it's augmented reality or virtual reality. But from your perspective, what do you see as the future for the Alienware brand?
I mean, there's an incredible amount of opportunity for us ahead. You know, gaming has more momentum today than it's ever had. The amount of innovation that's going on, the amount of new products that are coming into this space, some even from our competitors, the innovation that's coming in here, it's phenomenal. And, you know, we're no longer a niche for like the first 15 years of our company's history. I no longer go out there and with my Alienware shirt and people don't ask me, what is that? It's like people know already what Alienware is. When I tell people, you know, we do PC gaming, they're like, oh, yeah, my son is a huge PC plays Minecraft or he's playing Overwatch or he's playing this or that. So it's an incredible time right now. It's really exciting because not only are we benefiting from this incredible momentum, but we helped build it. And that's an incredible thing to be a part of. And, you know, we're an essential piece of the history of PC gaming and I think an essential contributor to helping to get to where it is today in many ways, at least from a hardware perspective. So the amount of momentum, the amount of energy, the amount of investment and everything that the entire industry is putting into PC gaming is unprecedented and way beyond anything we ever anticipated. In terms of opportunities that I see ahead, I think esports is massive. I genuinely believe that esports is going to become the most popular sport in the world in our lifetime. We are already seeing esports move into the Asian Games in 2022, and that's just another step in the path to it becoming potentially an Olympic sport. We're seeing esports being broadcast through the type of channels that you would expect, like online streaming platforms like Twitch.tv or Caffeine.tv, but we're also seeing our partnership with E-League bring esports to mainstream television as well to start kind of bridging those audiences and introducing it to television and giving accessibility to folks that enjoy watching TV in that type of a setting to this incredible culture and this incredible sport that's emerged here. And I've seen people get engaged from all types of ages and groups and demographics into the E-League esports broadcast. They see it as a sport like any other. There's competition in it. There's skill. There's passion. There's stories behind each of the athletes. And it's got all the right elements for it to be an extremely popular sport, which it already is. But ultimately, this is why I think it'll become the most popular sport. And within that, the opportunity we see for the entire gaming industry and the one that we're capitalizing on with Alienware is the hardware element of esports is massive. I mean, from my perspective, I don't think there's any other sport out there where the athlete depends on their equipment outside of vehicle racing where than there is in esports. I mean, your hardware can literally mean the difference, no matter how good of a player you are, between walking home with millions of dollars or walking home a loser with nothing. Mm-hmm. If that machine overheats, it locks up, it blue screens, it starts to lag, any issues occur, it's a very expensive mistake or it's a very expensive issue. So our commitment to gamers, especially esports gamers, is that quality will always be number one in everything that we do. And if we don't get it right for any reason, then there have been instances in the past where we haven't, like any company. The difference in what we're going to do is that we're going to immediately listen, respond, acknowledge if and when we failed, and fix it immediately. And that's been the commitment that we've delivered upon for years now. Quality is above everything else that we do. Performance is important. Industrial design is important. Our service and support are extremely important. But a lot of other companies will sacrifice those things, or will sacrifice quality in the sake of those things. Mm-hmm. They'll give you more performance, but they'll stress the system a little bit too much. They'll give you great performance and a great configuration in a really sexy, thin form factor, but 6 months after you own it, it starts to overheat as dust builds up in the fans and as it starts to lose its thermal efficiency because they push the limits so much without any thermal headroom, no headroom at all, to give you that sexy look because they know it's going to sell well, that they pushed it too far and it fails. Our commitment, because we know how gaming is more than just for fun nowadays, gaming is becoming, it has become a profession mm-hmm. for many people out there. Our commitment is that we're going to give you the tools you need to enjoy yourself with these systems for extended periods of time. We design our systems with at least a 4-year warranty option. So every computer you get from us has a 4-year warranty option. That's an incredible responsibility for us because we self-warranty the machine. We don't give it to a third party. We don't, you know, sell you an extended warranty contract from a reseller or anything like that. If you call us 3.5 years after you purchase the machine with an issue, we are going to repair that issue. You're going to get a replacement, an on-site service technician in your house to repair it, or whatever the case needs to be to get you back up and running at our expense. And that's important because we get to design the product up front to ensure that it's going to have the quality in there necessary so that you don't have those issues 3.5 years down the road. So I can go on to a whole rant about quality and the importance of it. I hope it gives you an idea. But esports, it's a critical area in the future of growth. We're doing a lot to help accelerate that. Our partnership with E-League, check that out if you haven't seen it. It broadcasts on different Turner networks around the country. We also have in China, we just actually announced our championship last weekend at China Joy. I was in Shanghai announcing this. But we have something called the Alienware Game Arena, where we hold 1,000 esports matches. This year alone, we've held 1,000. We'll hold about 2,000 before the end of the year. And this esports platform is intended to bridge the gap between the average gamer and the professional gamer. See, today there's a lot of professional esports leagues, like E-League and ESL and others and the Intel Extreme Masters. But to get into that league, you have to kind of be part of a professional team. To get into that professional team, you kind of have to go through an introduction somehow, if you can reach out to them, hope that they respond to you, show them the skills you've got. And you kind of have to be really, really damn good. It's almost like the NFL mm-hmm. to get into a professional esports league. What we're doing with the AGA, the Alienware Game Arena, is we've created a platform where it's open, basically. Any gamers can come in, they can form a team, they can compete, they can start things little by little, getting to know other players, getting to build teams together, and eventually grow with us into becoming that esports athlete. At the same time, we work with professional esports teams in the region, in China, that take on certain members that are aspiring to become professional esports athletes, and they take them under their wing, and they teach them how to improve their game. They coach them, basically, and they compete against them to improve their game. So it's this platform that creates a funnel to help create more esports athletes and get them into the league and get them into the professional sport eventually. It's almost like a minor league, if you will, like what baseball does. So we're doing a lot of things around esports. The other areas are virtual reality and augmented reality. We believe big in those categories. We think that virtual and augmented reality are going to be as disruptive over in our lives over the next 20 years as the internet has been over the past 20 years. If you think about how the internet has changed the way in which we learn, formal education, you have a question and we type it into Google or ask Siri or ask Alexa, the way in which we learn, the way in which we communicate, whether it be through social media networks, through email, through voice over IP connections, while we're playing a game, the way we communicate has changed completely thanks to the internet. Yeah. The way in which we entertain has completely changed over the internet as well. So think about solutions like, yeah, we have Netflix and Hulu and these online streaming platforms, but most of our entertainment today comes in through some type of internet solution. Even social media, you laugh at a GIF or you see a funny online video. You get an email that makes you laugh. You play an online game. You watch a movie. You do these things. Those three things, learning, communication, and education, completely disrupted by the internet over the past 20 years. And we take all these things with us now in our pocket, in a smartphone, right, which is kind of crazy. Think about it. We've only been really doing that for about 10 years or so since the launch of the iPhone. It was done before that, but in much smaller numbers. Virtual reality and augmented reality, we believe, are going to do the same thing. We believe that the way in which we communicate will be done less in a blind fashion like we do it today, where we're only really depending on audio for the most part. And a camera webcam solution, there's always been like this disconnect of personalization or with a webcam. It's like it just doesn't feel really natural. And that's why I don't think webcams have really taken off as much as a phone conversation has. But when you do a in-room type of virtual reality, multiple people are in one instance of a room, virtual reality interaction, it's a really cool and fascinating experience. And today it's very cartoonish and animated, but in the future, imagine it's going to look as good as real-time video looks today. We'll actually be able to see each other like you've seen in sci-fi movies through augmented reality solutions and virtual reality solutions. So I joke with people that it's the true human teleportation technology. But instead of teleporting our bodies, like we've always thought about from sci-fi movies and everything, VR and AR will allow us to teleport our minds to anywhere around the room, anywhere around the world. And we can be with anyone, anywhere, and basically at any time. You'll be able to transport yourself into the future, and you'll be able to transport yourself into the past. Not real, of course, not a time machine. But if you think about a movie and its setting, and a setting of a movie being an old Western, you'll be able to teleport yourself into that fictional setting that whoever that company or whoever produced that content decided to create for there. So you can, jokingly, we can be having this interview in a restaurant in 1922 if we wanted to, in New York, for example. And that environment can be all around us, and I would be looking at you, and we would be at a table actually having that conversation from the comfort of our homes. Now, that sounds really crazy and far-fetched, and people listen to me and they say, this guy's a dreamer. But when I remind them that, a smartphone's only 10 years old, and if I told you 20 years ago that you'd be carrying a computer, which imagine what computers looked like back then, in your pocket, and it would be 1,000 times faster and be able to communicate with anybody you want to, and you'd be able to do all the amazing things that we do with our smartphones today, they would have said, oh, you're a dreamer. You're crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
no, it's about this category, clearly.
It is. I appreciate that. It's great to hear from someone who has that sort of vision and passion, because it's the sort of thing I've been talking about for a while as well. This very disruptive technology and disruptive does not necessarily mean something bad, obviously. It can mean something amazing. I mean, the internet has truly been a disruptive technology. The world is totally different from the pre-internet days. While the internet was a thing when I was a kid, there was no web when I was a kid. That came when I was in college. And so really most people's awareness of the internet really didn't arise till later. And then to actually have lived through that, to have seen the birth of the web, the evolution of it. It's coming into play as a marketplace. It's the internet bubble bursting and then it reforming stronger than ever before. The argument over whether or not Web 2.0 even means anything. All of that was really fascinating to watch. And I agree with you in that I think we're seeing the same sort of thing the very earliest days for virtual reality and augmented reality. You know, virtual reality has had a couple of false starts in the past, largely limited by the hardware at the time, the hardware and the software, which wasn't quite up to the task to meet the expectations people had for it after the various science fiction media versions of what virtual reality was going to be versus what it really was when you put on that 30-pound helmet and you saw, a pterodactyl made out of four polygons. It's a much different world today, and to see where it's going, I really do hope to see VR and AR take off in a big, big way over the next few years. It's still got some barriers in front of it, including the various competing platforms, as well as the price to entry right now is still fairly high. But I think that those, just like other technologies, those issues will work themselves out over time as the best approaches and the technology itself becomes less expensive. So I really have high hopes for that as well. And to touch also on your point about esports and how that has become a big component and it's growing in importance, I would also add that the culture of live streaming games and Let's Plays and things of that nature has exploded over the last few years, where it might have been a few years ago, I might mention this to some people and they say, you watch other people play video games? What's that about? Well, now I've got a friend. She's the mom of a couple of kids. And she was telling me just the other day about how much she likes to watch these Let's Plays that have these guys playing games and making jokes the whole time. And I'm thinking, well, this is a mom of young kids. She's not in the gamer culture, but she's already aware of this element of gaming. So we're seeing that continue to grow as well. I think that you are right on target about gamer culture. You know, it's just getting stronger year over year. And you could even argue that the long time between console generations means that gamers who follow console games often are feeling like they're being left behind over time. They might get a half-hearted update, right? Or what could be viewed as a half-hearted update, because it's not a full jump in generation. It's technically the same generation, but slightly better specs. Meanwhile, you have the PC gamers who are customizing their rigs to their design, where, you know, it's playing the games they want to play. It's interesting because I've seen PC games ride an arc where for a while they were on top and then the console started to come into the foreground. And then you see that switch back and forth. I feel like the PC games are firmly grabbing the spotlight right now. And you're seeing the consoles being pushed a little further back. Probably we'll see that cycle continue over and over again until the end of time. But it is interesting to have seen it happen a few times at this point, because there was a time where post 1983 video game crash, I just became a PC gamer for many years. I skipped the Nintendo years. I skipped Super Nintendo. It wasn't until PS2, I think, before I came back over to consoles. So PC gaming, I think, is bigger than ever. I mean, it's clear if you go to any of these, whether it's a trade show event or something like the Penny Arcade Expo, which is all about all sorts of different games. PC gaming is huge there. I think we're just going to continue to see that. And I can't wait to see the next Alienware rigs. I can't wait to finally pull the trigger and buy one, because I keep very gently suggesting it to my wife. And that hasn't yet paid off yet, but I feel like I'm close. I'm real close. So maybe I'll have one of those monster rigs of my own before too much longer. Thank you so much for joining me and telling me more about the backstory of Alienware, kind of the philosophy of the company, where you guys are going. I really very much appreciate it.
Yeah, I really appreciate the opportunity. It's a really exciting time for us and a really exciting time to be a gamer. And first and foremost, we're gamers at Alienware. This is our lifeblood. We love this. You know, our jobs are hard, but in a lot of ways they're easy too, because we're making the biggest, baddest, amazing toys for ourselves first and foremost. And we're just very lucky that there's a lot of people out there that are like us that appreciate what we're building. So this is a lot of fun, and I really appreciate you giving us an opportunity to tell the story and share it with everybody.
Well, I do have one last question for you. Do you have a particular game that you consider to be your favorite? It can be from any era.
Yeah, well, right now, not my all-time favorite, but right now I'm playing PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds.
Oh, yeah.
We're having a lot of fun.
PUBG!
Yeah, we're having a lot of fun with that. We're doing squad matches every night now. Unfortunately, I was up till 2 a.m. last night doing that, and it's been a rough week because I've been up so late with the guys hanging out and playing. Before that, I was playing Overwatch, but my favorite all-time game was Half-Life.
Mm.
What Half-Life did is I've always been predominantly a first-person shooter or an RTS, real-time strategy gamer. And what Half-Life did for me for the first time is, as a first-person genre game, it brought in a storyline that was really engaging and fascinating. And you didn't want to just play the game because the graphics were awesome or the bosses were big and bad and amazing and the game was challenging and the weapons were awesome. You played it because you really wanted to see how this story ended, and you were captured by the storyline. And I think that changed games, especially the first-person genre, moving forward, where all those traditional elements that I spoke about, the game, the graphics, the guns, the weapons, the bosses, all these things, they weren't what defined a great game anymore. And everybody who's tried to use that recipe since and solely rely on it has, for the most part, not had a huge success. It's the storyline that has really helped define the success of games, whether it's in the game itself or it's a peripheral storyline, like in the case of Overwatch. It's a story about the characters that exist outside the game itself, and the game is like one element of their lives. It adds a more personal connection to the game, and it creates retention of the game. And I just feel, at least maybe it wasn't the first one to do it, but in my recollection of kind of my gaming career, my gaming life, Half-Life was the one that stood out to me as that moment where I was like, wait, this is more than a game. This is like a movie. This is a story, and I want to keep playing to learn more about it.
Well, as a fellow Gordon Freeman fan, I say that's a great answer. I hope you win many chicken dinners in the future. And thanks once again.
I haven't won one yet, but I've gotten close. I've come in second place a few times.
I've one of the reasons I need a new gaming rig is so I can play PUBG properly, because my current one is
it's just not
up to the task. When you're dropping frames that much in a game where you need to see where everybody is, it's not ideal. So that's one of the driving factors for me. I've been really chomping at the bit to play some PUBG. So, well, thank you again.
If it makes you feel any better, Jonathan, imagine what I'm playing on.
Uh-huh.
I have access to whatever I want, and I still drop frames in PUBG. The game is a bear. They need to optimize that thing.
It is in early access, so.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. In their defense, and yesterday or the day before, they came out with a patch that was a little rough. It introduced a bunch of lag, and they acknowledged it, which is cool. It's the same thing that we do when something wrong happens. You know, they acknowledged it, they apologized for it, and they guaranteed us that they were going to fix it. But it made it even more challenging. But you know what I found fascinating is all this lag was introduced into this game, and we were all still playing it.
Yeah. No, that's the sign of a very captivating game, when you can when you can spend time pointing out the problems and complain about them while you're still playing the game. That's an addictive game. Yeah, that's one that's gotcha.
Yeah, you know, they built something special. That's for sure. So I'm really happy for that team. You know, they're a small team. A smaller type of developer, and I love those stories. I love to see when small indie developers and medium-sized publishers and developers have these breakout games, because it's so hard.
Mm-hmm.
The market's so saturated right now. There's so many games out there. When a company can come out and kind of figure out the recipe and have that hit, you know, really changes the company, and it's an exciting time. So I'm really excited for the whole team at Blue Hole and all the guys that are making this game. We don't have a partnership with them or anything. This is not an endorsement. It's just me being the gamer nerd that I am. I just love this stuff.
I can appreciate that. Thank you again so much. It's been a fantastic conversation.
Thank you, Jonathan. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Again, I have to thank Frank for taking the time to speak with me. He also met with me during E3, and his passion for gaming was clear in both cases. And in a moment, we're going to cover a few more odds and ends about Alienware. But first, let's take another quick break to thank our sponsor. Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
All right, we're back. Now, I didn't talk about this with Mr. Azor, but Alienware experienced a really big change in 2006. That's when the PC company Dell, like, dude, you got a Dell, that Dell, acquired Alienware as a wholly owned subsidiary of Dell Computers. Nelson Gonzalez issued an open letter explaining the move from Alienware's perspective. And in that, he said that Dell and Alienware shared similar philosophies in the personal computer space, including the strategy to use the direct business model with consumers. And he said that Dell would give Alienware the assets to step up to the next level in gaming rig production and shipping. You see, there were these huge markets of opportunity for the company, especially in areas like in Asia. But as a boutique PC manufacturing operation, they just didn't have the assets that would allow them to reach those markets. They didn't have the manpower. They didn't have the hookups in the supply chain to be able to step up manufacturing to the next level. For that, they needed something. They needed to either grow exponentially, which was difficult considering their boutique PC status, or they needed to partner with an established big company in the space, and that ended up being Dell. So Gonzalez was quick also to point out that Alienware wasn't going anywhere. It was going to continue to exist as its own separate brand from Dell, with its own dedicated product development, marketing, planning, and customer support departments. So it would effectively operate as a private entity within the confines of Dell. You know, from the outside, that's what it would look like. And he was very careful to say, you're not going to see a whole lot of changes here. Now, Nelson Gonzalez served as CEO for Alienware until 2007. Today, Michael Dell is technically the CEO of the company because he's the founder and the CEO of Dell Technologies. And Frank Azor is the general manager. Over the years, the company has experimented a bit, both in case design and in new products. In 2014, Alienware announced its Alpha Steam Machine, which was a small PC box system, one of those self-contained PCs, very, very compact. And you would just hook that up to your display and your keyboard and your mouse, and it would take care of everything. Now, it ended up launching as a Windows 8 gaming PC in a box instead of a Steam Machine, but that was due to delays in the Steam OS, the operating system from Valve. And that reminds me, I need to do an episode about Valve at some point. These days, Alienware is also getting into peripherals. They are offering up some accessories to PC games like keyboards or a computer mouse, like a gaming mouse, that sort of thing, and displays as well. So they have branched out beyond the gaming rigs. This is not the first time that they've worked with various peripherals, but I can tell you they're really pretty. I got a chance to play with some when I was at E3, and I liked them. They felt great, and they look really nice, really snazzy. If I were a pro gamer, I'd probably be looking at those, although obviously I would want to make sure that they really stood the test of my elite skills. Being the gamer that I am, if you hand me a cutting-edge machine and tell me to give you my thoughts on it, chances are I'm just going to say it's real fast and pretty, largely because my skills are not at a level where I can really push the hardware at a decent amount to give you an idea of any limitations I might encounter. I doubt that I would ever run into any limitations unless it were something along the lines of trying to run a particularly complicated game, like complicated in the sense of graphics intensive and processor intensive on a machine. In which case, it's not really me that's testing the machine, it's the software. One thing I need to address before I get out of here is PC prices, because Alienware rigs aren't and never have been cheap. They are expensive. It's an expensive boutique, customized gaming rig approach, and so you're spending a premium for that. There's a great article on Tech Radar about Alienware's history that includes a specific example that I think is helpful. Back in 1998, in the early days of Alienware, remember, the company that became Alienware launched in 96. Well, in 98, that's when Alienware launched the first Area 51 tower desktop PC. The price tag for one particular configuration of this PC was $3,799, which, if you adjust for inflation, would be more than $5,645 today. This particular configuration of the Area 51 desktop, keeping in mind these rigs are customizable, so you could build it out with fewer bells and whistles, and that would bring the price down. It was an impressive build at the time. It included two Voodoo 3D graphics cards. It included a 2D graphics card, because remember, the Voodoo 3D graphics cards didn't handle 2D rendering on their own. You had to pair it with another graphics card. So it had three graphics cards total, and dual sound cards, which would allow for two different incompatible sound formats to work on the same machine. So that way, if you had a game that supported one but not the other, you were covered, because it had both of those sound cards in there. And it had a lot more to it as well. So it was a premium price, to be sure, and it definitely would be less expensive to build your own gaming rig from the ground up, selecting all the same components. So if you went out and bought the processors and the graphics cards and the sound cards and the motherboard and the case and the power supply and the cooling system and all of that stuff, if you bought all of that yourself, you would not spend so much money as you would buying the Alienware rig. But you also have to remember, part of that price that you're paying for Alienware includes the labor of putting all that stuff together for you and making sure that the actual computer works before it is shipped to you. So you don't have that frustration of building out a rig, turning on the power, and nothing happens. And then having to track down, where is the issue? Is there something that's not plugged in correctly? Is there a bad component? All of that would be taken care of for you. So part of the price goes to that. Another big part of the price ends up covering the aesthetic appeal of Alienware. These are customized machines with very cool cases, often with lighting effects and other elements that set it apart from other types of gaming rigs. So you then ask, all right, well, is that worth that extra amount of money? This really cool design that sets this apart from, say, a regular, you know, tower desktop style. And if that's important to you, then that extra money might be well warranted. The fact that all those decisions are taken care of for you, the build is taken care of for you, the aesthetic is there, if that appeals to you. And then granted, today, as we alluded in the interview, the complications of figuring out what components go into your computer, those have been whittled down significantly. You don't have to worry nearly as much today as you did back in the day, where you had the different battling sound cards and video cards that were dominating the space, and most of the games that were coming out would only support some but not all of them, which fractured the market. That's not as big an issue now. So you can take a lot of that confusion out, but it's still kind of a daunting process for a lot of people to build their own PC. So, yeah, Alienware rigs can get expensive, particularly if you want to build a beast of a machine. I do recommend that you go to the Alienware website and just, you know, go nuts. Like, just see what you could do if you went premium as far as you possibly could, because I guarantee you, you're going to get a rig that's going to come in at around, like, 10 grand. It's crazy, but it would also be amazing if you had that kind of cheddar to drop on a PC. Personally, unless six certain numbers come up in the near future, I don't think I'll be able to justify buying the premium cream of the crop, fastest that there is type of gaming rigs that are out there. But these Alienware rigs that are built, they also tend to perform really, really well against various benchmarks. They're not always at the top. Sometimes they're battling at the top with a couple of other gaming rigs, but they're always in contention. So that you get good performance as well. The question, are they worth the price? That's a decision that every gamer has to make for him or herself. I can say honestly, I have never owned an Alienware rig, but I have built out a rig online more than once. And one of these days, I'm guessing I'm going to pull the trigger on this, because I really do like the aesthetic and I do like the idea of all of that work being taken care of for me so I don't have to sit down and do it all myself. But that's because I have made that decision. I completely am aware that this is a premium style product. And then at that point, I can finally play the latest PC games. And then immediately start soaking up bullets from all the other players, because a gaming rig's performance depends pretty heavily on the skill of the gamer. And my skill is, I'm older than 40, guys. My Twitch skills have been on the decline for a decade, and they weren't great to start with, but I still enjoy playing. Well, I'm very glad that I got a chance to look into this particular company. It's one that I've seen around forever, and I've been a fan of their design for quite some time, but I'd never really looked into it before. If you guys have any suggestions for types of companies I should do an episode on, or people I should interview, or really any topic in technology that you would like to learn more about, whether it's cutting edge, brand new technology, or something from ancient history, and you've always wondered how did it work and where did it go, send me a message. Let me know what you want. My email address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com, or you can always drop me a line on Twitter or Facebook. The handle at both of those is techstuff, HSW. Remember, you can watch me record episodes live at twitch.tv/techstuff. I record on Wednesdays and Fridays. So if you want to watch an episode get recorded, including all the bits where I make little mistakes and flubs and have to go back and fix it, then you should tune in on Wednesdays and Fridays. I also like to chat with the chat room, and we have a good old time. So I'll see you then, and I'll talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.